Well, I'm going to be fairly brief because I'm very anxious, Barbara, that as we've discussed, that there is time for questions and discussion. My name is Alec Gatherer. I'm a temporary advisor to one of the World Health Organization's networks. It's a network of some 36 countries of Europe, and the majority of countries in Europe, looking really at health in prisons, but through that to health in criminal justice systems, and through that to health of people in the margins of society. Now, which one do I?
The down.
I don't know if I'm the only speaker that has made this. We were required to make this declaration. And as a good Aberdonian, I can say I have none to declare. I was, in fact, going to remind us, pick up where Andrew left, remind us that this is very much a human rights issue. WHO, as you know, 60 years old. And in fact, human rights, the right to health, built into the Constitution. I'm going too fast. I was also going to mention public health. As Andrew said, it's public health and human rights. Now this, oh dear me.
Do you want me
to? I rather like this quotation. Now you may think from Fran Baum. And I've got an intrusive mouse. This is a quotation from Fran Baum. You may think that her wording strives for a fairer, more just, healthier, kinder world. Does reflect a little bit on Michael Marmot's impressive presentation yesterday. In fact, Fran Baum, who is a professor of public health in Australia, was a member of his commission. Two things I wanted to talk about very briefly. Picking up again on what has been said earlier, Europe has been very concerned about migration for reasons that have been perfectly obvious by the other presentations. Now, in the EU, we have a rather strange a custom, and that is that the presidency of the EU changes every 6 months. Now, that is maybe not awfully good for continuity, but it does allow a whole range of different issues and themes to come up. And when Portugal had the presidency in 2007, they were going to build a shared vision for action on migration. I'm sorry to say that they didn't quite get the consensus there, because it's a rapidly changing field. And the thing that came out extremely and the next one. The thing that really came strongly in Portugal was the lack of information, the lack of data, the need for more research. Portugal reports will no doubt fed into the World Health Assembly work that Andrew referred to. So we haven't yet got the shared vision. If I could move on, the other people, and it's been mentioned already, the UEFA, the European Association of Public Health Associations. They set up a special section on migration some years ago. They have already had two Europe-wide conferences on the subject. They've established MIHO, which is in fact a monitoring system, getting some funding from the EU, which is no mean achievement. So they've got some funding to set up this monitoring system. And indeed, in their yes, thank you, Barbara. we're not going to debate all these words, but of course they are important words for us to try to understand and apply to the issues. But I think what I wanted to say from the UFA work is what they're beginning to, and they haven't reached any conclusion about, is what are the broad strategy that we're aiming for? Are we trying to say we've got to have special services, health services, dedicated to the immigrant, to the migrant population? Or are we going to try to say that health services have a duty to become more sensitive to the needs of migrant populations and therefore meet their needs in that way? Or are we going to say migrants have jolly well got to adapt to whatever health service exists in the country that they've moved to, or a mixture of that? And it'd be interesting for the World Federation and others to add into that, that debate. What is the broad strategy we're working towards? I think that Lars Molder is here from WHO. I'm only an advisor. But one of the things that they are quite keen on is contained in that last bullet point. We're not, solutions will not be imposed. They cannot be imposed. They must be country-led. The importance of training, which fits in, I think, very well with the priorities of the World Federation, and the sharing of good practice. And I think that is where UFA has really set up this mechanism for getting more information and sharing good ideas. Thank you. If you want more about what UFA is doing, then Dr. Walter Deville, and I've given his email address with, I should say, his permission. And Dineke, I don't know, well, you would know Dineke, of course, the chief executive of UFA, and also be very willing to respond to any queries. And with that, Barbara, I'd like to ask the speakers to come back up. Is that right? And,
yes.
And Andrew will help you with the discussion.
Okay.
Alex, thank you very much indeed. Alex has got to go away to spur another session into action, so we are without his wisdom and contribution from now on. But thank you very much indeed. And in his absence, I will try and steer us towards a discussion of these themes. And in fact, I only wish I could summon up what he'd said before. Oh, yes, I can. That's the one. Because what I want to do, rather than summarise what the many things that have been said already today, is where do we go from here? Dr. Hatcher introduced the subject as a subject of World Federation importance, and it is a world issue. And Alex has helpfully provided these four bullet points to really try and frame a debate about what we might together do as a World Federation in association with UFA, association with WHO, and in fact WHO's commitment to report back in less than 2 years' time on the action we can take on migration and health. So I really want to, apart from any other questions you wish to raise with us, want to try and steer the debate about action, an action focus to future measures we can take in this subject area. So please, comments and questions. Yes, please.
My name is Tomás Romero. I'm from Coronado, California, just across the bay here, very close to this place. I was very interested in Dr. Weinstein's comment about that the native Californians seem to have twice as much more chances of being incarcerated than the foreign-born people living in California, which includes myself, actually. And I was just interested in knowing if there is similar situation between the Mexican-born immigrants versus the Mexican Americans who have been living here for several generations. And I was thinking maybe if this problem of acculturation has to do with the acquisition of criminality. I mean, maybe the acquisition of English language may people lose their protection against criminality.
Well, I think that in terms of the prison population in California, the percentage of the prison population in California is about equal to the percentage of the Latino American or Mexican population in California. So that those people who are Mexican Americans then do just have an ordinary proportion of based on their population in the prison system. And as we said, that immigrants, irregular or regular, have a much lower percentage of, which is different than the European experience, where, you know, a lower percentage of appearance in the prison system. Now, within the prison system, there is a little a bit of difference that those people who are in supermax lockups in California's prison system, the Mexican Americans, as they call them, the Hispanic population, is twice as likely to be incarcerated in 24/7 lockdown situations called the security housing units here in California, based on alleged gang status. They are labeled as gang members, and which, you know, is a whole other discussion. But basically, a lot of homeboys and hangers-ons are labeled as gang members to and get thrown in these lockups for years on end. So, in answer to your question, I think it does show that in general the criminality, at least the that which is detected and able to be seen in statistics, is much lower for immigrant, whether they're irregular or regular immigrant population, and average for the citizens.
Thank you for that. Any other comments or questions?
Hello, my name is Alan Burns from Florida, and I also look at migration quite a bit. And one thing I was wondering, in the European context, are people taking into account that migrants have such diversity amongst themselves that they include health promoters, doctors, other people in the field of public health, but through the migration system, they kind of get demoted into manual workers or whatever. And we were talking a minute ago about how the system is going to adapt. I wonder if any thought was given to incorporating people who are in the health system of sending countries into public health systems in Europe.
I hope Alan can help on this, but only from anecdotal experience can I say that we are not very clever at assimilating people with appropriate skills from other countries into our own workforce. There are many accreditation barriers and standard-setting barriers. I'm afraid to say that Alan is president of a standard-setting organization, and I hope he will defend me what I'm about to say. But I think there are very many people languishing as asylum seekers, particularly in my own experience, who have a lot to offer but do not get that opportunity. And I don't think the UK is alone in having that lack of capacity to adjust.
Yeah, I mean, nothing much to add there.
Within Europe, there are conventions set up whereby people's qualifications are mutually recognised, and so that's not so much of a problem, and that includes the new Europe, the new nations in Europe. But I think the issue is a big one when it comes to countries outside of Europe. So, for instance, people say coming from Africa, for example, where the recognition may not be there. And you're absolutely right. People do find themselves in menial jobs, and all that skills and training are completely wasted. And that's something which we need to work together and try to find solutions to, and make sure that such people are recognized and that their talents are brought to bear. And of course, it's also a problem in terms of the country they're leaving, because it's the brain drain issue and the losing talented health professionals moving from south to north, and it's a massive problem. Please.
Alba Amaya Brun from University of Florida. I probably missed the first presentation, but I want to ask you about the HPV vaccine, who recently had been a compulsory request for new migrants to come to the United States as a legal, relatives of a citizen, for example, and every immigrant has to take that, young ladies especially, as a compulsory. So what do you think about that as a human rights issue?
What about you, Andrew?
I hope not, Alan. I hope Alan will come in on this. HPV is a new immunization program in the UK, which has been available only in my country, Scotland, for a couple of months. But as a requirement for entry into our country, we haven't got there yet in our country. I don't know about others. Do you want to?
No, I don't know about it as an immigration requirement. It's certainly something that's being rolled out in schools. What age, I can't remember what age they are, but I think they're sort of
13 to 18.
So people can opt out, but I mean, basically it's a population approach, and I don't think we've got it for people coming into the country.
It certainly wouldn't be a requirement, I'm pretty sure of that, not a requirement for entry.
Is that compulsory?
Coming into which country?
I mean, it's very interesting. I think it tells us more about the effectiveness of the marketing campaign from the company that makes this than anything else, because in the communities, it's now, if you've noticed, a huge controversial subject that parents of school girls are just saying, no, we won't do this. This is a human experiment on a mass scale, and we don't want it. But here, there's probably little controversy in terms of the migrant population, and I think that it just, to me, underscores something that, again, I'll raise the idea of prisons, is that it's well known in the prisoner rights and human rights community that the worst, most destructive, most horrible prisons in the United States are those for migrants. That the detention facilities under the ICE detention facilities are the worst.
Happening at the detention centers. I was like, wow. I mean, I don't know if you heard any about that, anything about that, or has.
I mean, maybe there are others in the room that comment. I have not. And that may tell us more about the failure of HIV education in the detention centers than and them not taking into account those real needs of detainees to understand what's going on with them. But I have not heard about any kind of horror like that would be.
And I also there was an article, I believe, in the Washington Post not too long ago about people who were coming out of the detention centers as some of them were actually mistaken as undocumented immigrants, and the length of time it took to process their release was incredibly long for somebody who's actually a legal immigrant in this country. And they were talking about the problems of mental health issues. This person in particular was, I forgot which country he was from, but he was actually, he had mental health issues and he was medicated, but when he went into the detention system, he was not given his medication because, of course, his emotional state became incredibly imbalanced.
That sounds like an ordinary story.
Can I take one last comment in order to round off the session, if there's any takers?
We haven't solved the WHO problem.
No, we have not. Your comment. Right. The judgment I'm thinking of actually refers to a prisoner who took the British government to court over access to needle exchange systems in prisons, and lost, by the way. What was at stake there was, amongst other things, was the needle exchange a preventive program or was it a treatment program? And they felt it was a preventive program, and as such, it was not an entitlement. And they are making a general issue of principle that matters of prevention don't have the same status in entitlement as matters of treatment. So I think that's a pretty firm principle that's coming out of the European Court. So this is a court of appeal at the European level. It's not just a UK court interpreting European law. Can I just try and bring together various strands from this morning? Dr. Hatcher opened with a masterly overview of the agenda here. My colleague, Dr. Marion Davis, on the European matters. Dr. Weinstein, a fascinating drilling down of matters of immigration, migration, criminality, and the local US. Well, local is big, it's half a continent, the US picture. Myself a bit more on Europe, and Alex Gatherer on action. What we then have had is a very rich set of contributions about specific issues, which illustrates to me the dynamic nature of the issues which are boiling up around migration and health, particularly immunization programs. In reading behind this subject, HIV has come up a lot as an issue which is turning from a standard HIV testing in the case of the reading, something that is required, to then something which is a matter of interest because there's a treatment for it, and therefore there's no harm in having lots and lots of HIV testing indiscriminately. So the dynamic nature of things that are maybe were a good idea at the time turning into something that are really quite a bad idea really educates me a lot about the migration and health agenda being right at the leading edge of what is right to do and what is potentially harmful to do in public health practice. So a whole host of issues and some strands of joint work. I think there's an appreciation certainly from myself in Europe, with the American agenda, that we have a similar form of agenda, but perhaps a different order of priorities. But what we could do is work together on this to form a joint action plan, which would influence and help WHO, amongst other world organizations, to create much more awareness of this in the public health community and protections for the people on the margins of the world and moving across the world, such as the migrants about whom we've been talking about this morning. So thank you very much indeed for coming to the session, contributing so well, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the conference. And lastly, can I thank the World Federation of Public Health Associations for sponsoring this session, which I've found to be absolutely fascinating. Thank you.